ever heard of digital currencies like Bitcoin, Ethereum, and buzzwords like blockchain, cryptocurrencies, and mining? Don't know what it all means or how to get started? Well, at Let's Talk Crypto, we break it all down in easy-to-understand terms and help you learn and earn in the age of cryptocurrencies. So welcome to the Let's Talk Crypto Show, brought to you by SchoolOfCrypto.com with your hosts, Barry Moore and Tom Galeski.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Let's Talk Crypto. I'm one of the hosts, Barry, and with me as always is...
It's Tom. Good afternoon, Barry.
Tom, good day, brother. How you doing?
Yeah, good, man. Excited to be here as always. Lots of stuff changing all the time, and very happy to share some really cool things with our listeners today, mate.
Yeah, I've been going down the rabbit hole for the last couple of days on wallets, so... We're going to talk today about all the different types of Bitcoin wallets or crypto coin wallets that you can have. So before you get involved in Bitcoin or crypto, if you're looking to get into it, you got to have somewhere to store that. Just like when you take the cash out of the cash machine, you got to have somewhere to put it. Now that's going to be in your pocket or your wallet. The crypto version of that is a wallet. So we're going to talk about the lots of different kinds of wallets, lots of different options you can choose from. So we're going to go through all of them today, or most of them today, and just try to give you the basis for you to make a decision on which one might be best for you, because there's pros and cons to all the different kinds. So, but before we even get into wallets, let's just do a quick review of public and private keys, because that's really the grunt behind, or the technology behind all these wallets, is your public and private key. So just a quick reminder there that when you are buying Bitcoin or trading Bitcoin, you need an address to do that. So just like if someone's going to send you mail, you need an address for them to send mail to, or you need an address for them to send the money to or the Bitcoin to. So your presence on the blockchain or your presence in the Bitcoin ecosystem is based on two addresses, a public address and a private address. So those are referred to as public and private keys. So the public key is the address you would send that coin to. So if I want to send Tom some money, I need his public key or his public address to send him money. And then for him to access it at the back end and take that money, he needs his private key. Never share your private key with anybody. We'll tell you that straight off the bat. We'll probably mention it every single episode. But if someone gets a hold of that private key, they've got all your money. So make sure that you guard that carefully. And we're going to talk about some ways that we do that. So Tom, why don't you tell us maybe a little bit about the two kind of broad categories of storage when it comes to wallets?
Okay, Barry. So the best way that I've found that I can explain this to, quote marks, normal people like my mum and dad, is if you look at the public and the private key and relate that similar to email. So we all have an email address. Well, the majority of us would have one. Now, if I want to send Barry an email, he has an email address. I can quite happily and easily send him an email. So your public address is your email address, which you can give to anyone. You can put on your website. You can put on business cards, wherever you need someone to send you that information. Now, the private key is the same as the password to access your email. So if I have your public key, aka I've got your email address, it doesn't mean I can log in, check your email, or send email on your behalf. But if I do have your password, or the private key, that means I can log in as you, I can send email on your behalf, which you do not want to do. So the private key is just like the password attached to your email, and the public component is the email address that you share with everybody. Does that make sense, Barry?
Absolutely, yeah. So you want to safeguard that private key just like you would safeguard your email password or your PIN code for your ATM card. If someone has that, they can clean you out.
So yeah, be very, very careful. So if we talk about wallets themselves, so there's two broad categories, right? One's hot storage, and then the other one is cold storage.
Right. So the major difference there is how you access those funds, right? So hot storage typically means that it's online and it's connected to the internet, right? So if you have a wallet up on your phone's connected to the internet. So that would be hot storage. If you have a web-based wallet, for example, which we'll talk about in a second, that web-based wallet's connected to the internet. It's live on the internet. So that means it's potentially hackable. The wallets don't get hacked all that often, but just know that anything that's stored on a machine that's connected to the internet, there is a potential for someone to come in and hack it and get into it, right? So that's what hot storage means. It's got an active connection to the internet. Now, cold storage, as you might guess, is just the opposite of that. So you can store your Bitcoin or your private keys, more to the point, offline so that they're not connected to the internet. We'll talk about a couple ways to do that. So we're talking about paper wallets, and we'll talk about hardware wallets in a minute. Those are two examples of cold storage where your Bitcoin, your private key is not connected to the internet presently, which means it's much harder for someone to hack, right? So I've got a hardware wallet, which we'll talk about in a second. If someone wants to hack my private keys into that, they got to come to my house. They got to break into my safe and take it out of my safe and then connect to the internet. And then that hardware wallet has a password associated with it anyway. So even if they had their hands on the physical device and went to plug it into something, they'd still need the password, the PIN code to get into that hardware device. So my keys are offline for the money that I want to store and keep long term. It's offline away from the internet so that nobody can get into it. So you've got hot storage connected to the internet, cold storage not currently connected to the internet. And then beneath those two broad categories, we have a number of different types of wallets. So Tom, you want to launch into a couple of those different types?
Yeah, for sure. So this is a really good place for people to start. And it's usually what I would call the software or the app wallet. So the app wallet, as it suggests, is an app on your phone. Most smartphones nowadays, especially Android or iPhone, fully supported. You basically download the app for free. It can then generate this public key and private key for you. So it will do everything for you. And it's now stored on your mobile device, which you can then access at any time. One of the big things, one of the gotchas that a lot of people don't do, but you should do, is to enable what we call in technical terms, the 2FA, which stands for two-factor authentication. That means it'll send you an SMS. You might have to use an authenticator product. Google have one, which generates a random number, or put a PIN number, or all three. Either way, that means if someone gets access to your mobile phone, you leave it lying around, in theory, they could log into your phone and transfer the funds out. As a classic example, Mr. Barry, someone dropped their phone last week and they smashed the screen, which is fine. That happens. But then you take it to a phone repair place. The first thing they say is, excuse me, sir, can I get your PIN number? So when we replace the glass, we can check to make sure your phone's working. Now, if they really wanted to, they'd log into your phone. They've got the PIN code. If you didn't have the two-factor authentication set up with a PIN number or that third-party Google app, in theory, they could absolutely log into your software wallet on your phone and transfer the funds back to themselves, and you could not stop that.
Yeah.
So
that was actually me. I actually smashed the screen on my phone. I had to take it in, get a new screen put on. I had a software wallet on my phone, an app wallet on my phone with about $1,000 worth of Bitcoin on it. I was pretty nervous to hand it over. So something to be aware of with these app wallets is you potentially have the situation where you may kind of lose the whole access to the wallet because you've lost your phone. You drop your phone over the side of a boat and down at the bottom of the bay or whatever. Guess what? Your app's gone on that as well. So some of those you'll be able to recover, and we'll talk about recovery phrases in a second. Some of them you might not be able to. So something to take into consideration when you're choosing a wallet.
Yeah. Another version of that is a software wallet. So it's still soft, but it's not on your phone. So this is something, an app or a program that you install on your computer. Most of them nowadays are PC and Apple compatible. And it's literally you download the application from the website, and we'll talk about this because this is a big, big, big gotcha in a second. So you download the wallet, you install it, it then generates the wallet ID for you or your public key. It will give you your private keys. These are the ones that you write down and don't ever lose or give to anybody. And then you run that off the PC or the computer. Same thing. You put a password to log in, it can encrypt it, and it can store it on that computer. So what happens if something happens to your computer? Same thing. Password protected, have the two-factor authentication enabled, just as another layer of security. Super, super, duper important.
Yeah, and the other thing to keep in mind if you're doing a software wallet on your desktop or laptop computer is the fact that, you know, your computer may be compromised. It may have a virus on it. It may have a keystroke recorder on it, you know, sending all your keystrokes off to somebody. There's some malware, some malicious software on your computer. So there is a potential for people to remotely take over your computer, remotely get your password to log into your app or whatever. So that's really kind of one of the big dangers of the application type wallets, is that you could be putting them on a compromised device and you would never know it. So again, two-factor authentication will go a ways to solving that problem. So if someone needs your password, but they also have to put in the code, SMS that's sent to your phone, then at least they won't be able to get into your wallet if you're using two-factor authentication.
Okay, Barry. So also to continue on, as far as the internet or the hot storage wallets are concerned, they're referred to them as web wallets. And when you go to an exchange, now an exchange is where you basically buy cryptocurrency, and we'll cover that in a future episode. They are essentially a version of web wallet. It's a website where you log into that stores your currency. Now, pretty much every exchange where you buy cryptocurrency or Bitcoin has, or essentially is a web wallet. It's a version of a web wallet. There are other versions that exist that are not on the exchanges. And this is very highly recommended, because what we're finding is it has happened before and I'm sure it will happen moving forward. These exchanges do hold your cryptocurrency. So if they were to be hacked, essentially they could get access to your funds because they're hacking the exchange, not you personally. So our advice is always go to an exchange to buy your crypto, then take it out of the exchange's wallet into a wallet that you control. Now, you can do that through web wallets. Web wallets is just another version of a hot storage. If you refer to our show notes, we'll give you a couple of different ones that we use, and you can do your own research and find out which one works for you. And then there's a combination of the two where you've got a web wallet, which is available to you online, but then you can get the app version of it, which essentially is logging into the websites. It's the one and the same. It's just available through two different mediums. They have an app version and they have the web version. Really good for getting your currency out of the exchange. And it's nice and simple because that's a touch of your hand.
The distinction between a software wallet and a web wallet, for example, is if on my laptop I've got a piece of software installed on my laptop, then that's going to be a software wallet. It's an application wallet. If I'm just logging into a website, I don't have a piece of software installed on my laptop. I'm just using a browser. So other than the browser, I don't have any software on my laptop. So I'm just logging into a website like blockchain.info, for example, is one of the wallets I use. That does exactly what Tom said. I log into the wallet. That wallet's just a web wallet. I log it into a website with a password and my two-factor authentication. That's got my Bitcoin stored there. I can also pair that with the blockchain app that's on my phone, so I get access to it from my phone through an app as well. And again, which also has two-factor authentication on it as well. So even if I lose my phone, I can still get into the website. If I don't have access to the computer or the web, I can get to it through my phone. And if I lose either one, I'm still kind of covered because the private key is still safe. So that also is a distinction worth making at this point, is that the money itself is not actually stored in your wallet, even though that's a great metaphor and a great way to think about it. So if I've got $1,000 worth of Bitcoin stored on my phone, for example, and I lose my phone, it's not like losing your wallet. And if your wallet has $1,000, you know, $100 bills in it, there's $1,000 in your wallet. That money's gone. It's gone because it's actually in your wallet. So the money with Bitcoin, it's not actually in your wallet. Your wallet is just holding the private keys. Your money or your record, your ledger of how many Bitcoin you own is on the blockchain. So you're using that wallet software to access the blockchain and claim basically the Bitcoin transactions on the blockchain that belong to you. You're saying, right, these 10 transactions where I bought 100 Bitcoin or $1,000 worth of Bitcoin, or someone gave me $1,000 worth of Bitcoin, those transactions belong to me. How can I prove they belong to me? I've got my private key right here. All right. But that $1,000 on the ledger belongs to you, Tom, and that's how you access it. So even if you do lose your wallet, as Tom said, as long as you have access to that key, you can recreate the wallet and reclaim those funds that are essentially stored on the blockchain.
I think that's probably a good summary of the hot storage, Barry. So we'll move into the couple of versions of cold storage. One of the most common ones that we see now, and it's relatively inexpensive because it's a piece of paper, and they refer to them as paper wallets. So when you generate a wallet, it gives you a piece of paper to print, which has your public key and your private key on the piece of paper. They're generally represented by a QR code, which is like a little rectangle, little squiggly squares in it. That's the easiest way, because then you can scan them with your smartphone. That's the easiest way to do it. But then it has your private key as well on that same piece of paper, also with another little QR code on the piece of paper. So the whole idea of it is you generate this wallet and gives you the public and the private key. You print it out and that's it. That website that's done the generation for you, that's finished. It's done its job for you. That piece of paper is now, like Barry said, it is your wallet. If you lose that piece of paper with the private keys on it, it's done. Just like you lose a conventional wallet, if you lose that and drop that in the ocean, it's finished. You're not going to get it back unless you go swimming for it. In this instance, the paper wallet is the security element. So the whole idea is you generate your wallet, print the piece of paper out, lock that away in your safe, and it's done. So when you need to access your funds, you basically need that private key to reference the public wallet to retrieve the funds that are stored in that wallet at that time. So it's a really good way of keeping stuff for long-term holds. And as we go through this, Barry, I think it's very important for people to maybe consider, what are they doing with cryptocurrency? Now, if you're trading and you're buying and you're moving things around, these hot style wallets are probably a better solution because you're in and out all the time. But if one of your strategies is to like a long-term play where you just want to buy and hold, that's where these offline or the cold storage wallets are much better, because you put the currency in and it's almost like a set and forget. So you're not trading with it every day because it can be a little bit more clumsy that you've got to go to the safe, get the piece of paper out, scan in the code, open up the wallet so you can transfer funds for making transactions. That's where the hot wallets or the software wallets are heaps better for that. Whereas the cold is for more like the long-term buy and hold strategy. And that's what I've done with my kids a few months back. We sat down and had a bit of meeting about this new crypto thing that dad's really excited about. And they allowed me to transfer some money out of their accounts. We bought some cryptocurrency and we just got them in an offline wallet and they're done. Hopefully when they're old enough to appreciate it and the value of crypto goes where we're hoping it will go, they'll be very, very happy little kids. So that'll be awesome to see how that pans out.
But I would suggest that, you know, you potentially might want to do a combination of both, right? So you might have a couple thousand dollars worth of currency that you're trading or spending actively or paying your electric bill or whatever with it. And you have that in a software wallet. And then your long-term savings, you might store offline in a cold storage wallet, a hardware wallet or something like that. Just like if you think about your traditional bank accounts, a lot of people will have like a daily transaction account, and then they'll also have like a savings account. And a lot of banks will, you know, they won't let you spend straight out of your savings account. If you want to spend that money, then you've got to transfer it into your transaction account and then use it from there. So you can do a similar sort of thing. You can have the bulk of your kind of savings or investment Bitcoin in a cold storage wallet offline, but then the stuff you're trading or using every day, you can have it in software. So it's not an either or, you can be a combination of both.
I've got experience with all these wallets, but Barry, you've actually got one of these little hardware devices, which we refer to as a hardware wallet. And how about I throw it to you and you can talk to our awesome listeners about it.
So hardware wallets, the last kind of category we're going to talk about is a hardware wallet. And a hardware wallet is just a physical device that you could have your private keys on and you can carry it with you, right? So if you're traveling overseas or whatever and you want to take your money with you, I've got one called a Ledger Nano S, which I really like. It's kind of about the size of a large USB drive. So, if I want to take my money with me, I just slip that in my pocket and away we go. It is password protected. So even if someone did get their hands on it, they would have to know the PIN code to access the private keys. But how they work is they're like a little USB. It's got a little screen on it, little tiny screen on it, and some buttons on there where you can enter your PIN codes, etc. And then it's got like a little dongle and you plug that into your computer. Once it's then that device is then online. And then it identifies itself with the private key. And now it's got a version of the wallet online or on your laptop, for example. And you can fire it up and then the private key is validated from the device. And then you can start accessing the funds that are associated with that private key. The nice thing about it is, it's small, it's portable. You can put it in a safe, you lock it in a drawer somewhere. It's password protected. So people will need the PIN to get to it. It is customizable, meaning that I can put multiple wallets onto that same device. So I can have, for example, I've got a Bitcoin wallet on the device. I've got a Litecoin wallet on the device. I've got a Ripple wallet on the device as well. So it's actually storing multiple types of currencies on the single device, which is pretty cool as well. There are other ones, and I'm sure there will be more popping up in the time to come. Trezor is the other big player in that space at the moment, and there are a couple of new ones popping up. But if you head over to the show notes, we'll have a little links and descriptions where you can find out more about the different hardware wallets out there as well.
Yeah, great points, Barry. As you mentioned before, you can have more than one. So you can have many web, you can have different apps. I've got pretty much, I think, 9 or 10 of the different ones now, but I'm doing that for testing, not because I've got money scattered all over the place. So that's really, really important. So something to consider is, when you're doing your research on whether it's hot storage or cold storage, is what you're going to store on it. Like Barry mentioned, there's a lot of different types of coins out there. So, Bitcoin's the most popular one, but we hear a lot about Ethereum. Well, Ethereum is a total different type of cryptocurrency, and it has its own type of wallet. So if you went to, for example, Ethereum's website, they have their own version of this soft wallet or web wallet, and that's different to Bitcoin. So depending on what type of currency you want to store on there will actually vary what type of wallet that you get. Now, one thing you really, really need to do your research with when trying to find a wallet, so work out what you want to store on it and then have a look at the different versions of soft wallets or hot wallets versus cold wallets. But this is where you've got to be very, very careful, and that's to do with the fees associated with these wallets. Now, to get the wallets, it's free. However, some of them charge you to put money in them. Most of them charge you to take money out of them. And it will vary. So it'll vary from Bitcoin to Ethereum to Litecoin to Monero. There's so many different types of coins that have different types of wallets and that have different types of fees. Now, the fees are relatively dynamic. So it depends on how busy the blockchain is with transactions, how many transactions there are in the blockchain. And it can actually go down to the time of the day. If it's really, really busy, they actually charge you a higher fee to transfer money in and out. Some of the wallets also allow you to say, no, I need this super, super, super duper fast, and they'll charge you a little bit more for that transaction. Or you can just send it into the network, say, listen, all your miners out there verifying these transactions, just do it in normal, add it to the queue, and get it done. Now, I think from what I understand with the theory is that the blockchain for Bitcoin itself can do 3 to 5 transactions per second. Now, it doesn't sound like a lot considering how many transactions are happening all around the world. But then if there's a backlog, that means that a transaction could actually take 10 or 15 minutes before it's processed. Now, in real-time worlds, that's still awesome compared to normal internet banking nowadays anyway. I think something to look out for is the fees that are associated to actually getting access to your money. It's nowhere near as bad as the banks, but if you're doing lots of little transactions, the fees can really, really add up. So really be careful with that. Do the research. I will, as Barry suggested, I will add to that list of some of the wallets that we use, and I've also done a breakdown of the fees. Now, these things change all the time, so take it with a grain of salt. Do your own research. We'll add the ones that we use to the show notes, and you guys can reference that for you know, as a starting point at the very least on what you need to look for.
Yeah, great. I think that's a really good overview on wallets. And if you want to find out more, you can head over to the show notes at schoolofcrypto.com/show. And find the show notes for this episode. We'll have some links in there to some of the wallets that we use, both software and hardware wallets that we like and we use, and some instructions on how you can set up your own paper wallet as well. So I just want to thank Tom and thank you, the listener, for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Okay, bye-bye for now.
Thanks for listening to Let's Talk Crypto Podcast. You can find the links, show notes, and all the latest cryptocurrency news over at schoolofcrypto.com.